Velkommen til Digitaliseringspodden. Programlederen Jens Christian Bang. Digitaliseringspodden levert av Computer World og Already On.
Denne episoden blir uten Dag, fordi han dessverre ikke med til South by Southwest i Austin, Texas. Her det nemlig en gigantisk konferanse som har temaene interaction, film og musikk. Jeg mest da for interaction-delen. Og her går det i AI, VR, AR, blockchain, flyvende biler, døgn rundt. I går så var jeg på en sesjon som het Death over a Road Race, Ending Traffic with Flying Cars. Og den dreide seg da om flyvende biler. Uber sier at i 2023 så skal de lansere noe som heter Uber Air. Og det vil si at de skal frakte mennesker da rundt i byene med flyvende biler, eller droner. De hadde en liten sånn håndsopprekning om vi trodde på at de kom til å være i gang i 2023. Og halvparten av salen trodde at de kom til å være i gang. Neste spørsmål var om vi kom til å tro at dette var i gang om 10 år. Og da trodde hele salen på det. Men det som var interessant var at to karer, en fra NASA og en fra Bell helikopter, ble også spurt. Og de mente at dette var fullt mulig i rundt 2025. Og da snakker vi om egentlig om 5-6 år unna at vi har flybilene. De ble også spurt om hvilke problemer de så med å kunne oppnå da, at man begynte å frakte folk rundt i byer med flyvende biler. Og problemet de snakket mest om var regler for luftfart, få tak i nok piloter og de rammene rundt, i stedet for egentlig å i det hele tatt nevne noen problemer rundt det, og så i det hele tatt lage en flyvende bil. For det så virket som ikke skulle være noe problem. De forventer jo også at batterier skal bli lettere og ha mer kapasitet om noen få år. Selve Austin føles som en fremtidsby. Altså her det er elsykler og elskutere overalt. Folk med dress og slips kommer susende av gårde på elskutere. En elsykkel eller en scooter kan aktiveres på noen sekunder gjennom en Uber-app. Jeg bruker elsykkel hele tiden selv for å komme meg fra foredragssted til foredragssted, eller tilbake igjen til hotellet. Rundt i gaten her så går det folk med lilla hår og med skjerm med reklame på ryggen. Det er roboter som går rundt og serverer kaffe, eller lager kaffe. Det er VR-rom, det er exposentre. Det er som også leve i fremtiden, eller en sci-fi-film. Gjestene i dag er folk som jeg har truffet. Jeg har truffet mange interessante foredragsholdere og folk også på arrangementer. Den første vi skal møte, det er Morten Paulsen, som er generalkonsul for Norge. Han har ansvar for store deler av USA. Mye av jobben hans er å legge til rette for handel mellom Norge og USA. Og jeg møtte han på noe som heter Scandinavian House i Austin, der det var mange nordmenn og mange skandinaver i det hele tatt. Jeg står her sammen med Morten Paulsen, som er generalkonsult for en ganske stor del av USA. Hei!
Hei, hei. Ja, jeg er jo basert i Houston i Texas, men vi dekker et område som spenner seg fra Nebraska i nord til Puerto Rico i sør. Men hoveddelen av det vi driver med da er jo basert rundt Houston, Austin og sentral Texas og en del i Florida.
Hva gjør egentlig en generalkonsul?
Ja, vi ivaretar prøver da, så godt vi kan, og ivareta norske interesser, altså bilaterale forhold da, mellom USA og Norge. Men det er særlig to områder. Altså, vi er jo et klassisk generalkonsulat, så vi har jo konsulære tjenester for nordmenn og andre. Men hoveddelen av min virksomhet da, det er jo mot såkalt næringsfremme, eller å styrke da de økonomiske båndene mellom Norge og den delen av USA da.
Ja, og det gjør man kanskje gjennom denne konferansen som pågår nå?
Ja, altså litt av bakteppet er jo at jeg kom over til Houston i 2015, og det var jo midt i oljenedturen, og så tenkte jeg at nå skal jeg være på et sted med bare olje og gass, og det var kanskje ikke det Norge var mest opptatt av på det tidspunktet der. Så så jeg meg litt rundt og så at det, her skjer jo veldig mye annet rart også. Og dette med tech og startups og virksomhet knyttet til det, det var veldig interessant. Og da begynte vi da å engasjere oss mer i å koordinere norsk innsats på South by Southwest. Og vi har også gjort litt mer på shipping, og vi prøver å få til litt mer på medisin og helsetjenester.
De som ikke vet hva South by Southwest er, for det jo sikkert en del, kan du fortelle hva slags konferanse det er?
Ja, veldig kort fortalt så begynte det jo som en musikkkonferanse tilbake på 80-tallet, så har det gradvis utviklet seg til å bli en altomfattende, kall det teknologi, livsstil, filosofi, altså det er nesten alt mulig rart for tiden. Men det begynte som musikk, så fikk du etter hvert inn tech, og nå er jo også miljø og klima også en del av det.
Ja, det er jo veldig mye folk her. Har du en anelse om hvor mange som besøker denne konferansen?
Vi har ikke full oversikt over det, men det er flere hundre nordmenn som kommer over hvert år. Jeg har snakket med festivalledelsen og sier at Norge er faktisk et lite land i verden, men vi er en av de landene som sender flest deltakere til South by Southwest. Kanskje 400 eller noe sånt i år.
Ja, det er ganske mye. Men du merker det når du går rundt i byen nå, så hører du norske stemmer overalt.
Ja, bare de få årene jeg har vært med da, så har det sett en klar økning. Kanskje for et par år siden så merket vi det spesielt, og det tror jeg var på grunn av økt mediedekning hjemme i Norge av festivalen, og alle, eller ikke alle, men mange av mediehusene er jo her, har vært her, og når de begynner å skrive mer om det, så tror jeg det har hatt en sånn multipliserende effekt på norsk deltakelse.
Ja, vi er jo på noe som heter Scandinavian House. Hva er det?
For noen år siden så var det Oslo som hadde en sånn Oslo Lounge, et sted hvor man kunne møte, hvor man hadde en del foredrag og kunne hang out med folk man traff. Så for to, eller i fjor, så kom SAS på banen og lagde en lounge. Det var jo i forbindelse med at vi hadde kronprinsbesøk også fra Norge. Og det har vært et stort løft i positiv retning. Det er jo et fantastisk sted, og det gjør jo at vi også har et sted å arrangere da ulike aktiviteter, for det er ekstremt dyrt å operere og gjøre ting på South by Southwest, så vi er veldig takknemlige for å ha denne muligheten på SAS-loungen.
Ja, altså, og det som er litt morsomt, synes jeg, med denne konferansen, er jo det er mye faglig sterke folk, det er store foredragsholdere som er kjente i hvert fall i USA, men det er også et yrende byliv, kveldsliv, men det hører kanskje helt til det selve byen?
Jo, absolutt. South by Southwest er jo et produkt av Austin, kan du si, og Austin har jo et slagord som sier keep Austin weird. Og dette med aktiv musikk og nattliv, det har jo vært noe av det som kjennetegner Austin, og de har vel de har flere hundre live utesteder som holder på dag og natt, holdt jeg på å si, og det er en veldig viktig del av Austins identitet.
Ja, det er en fantastisk by. Men da skal vi inn og så høre på noen av foredragene.
Reklame.
Vil du vite mer om hvordan din bedrift kan oppnå gevinster med kunstig intelligens? Kom på CIO Forum 28. mars og få råd og erfaringer fra de ledende aktørene på området. Få hjelp til å finne de lavthengende fruktene innen kunstig intelligens.
CIO Forum er et gratis halvdagsseminar hvor frokost er inkludert. Meld deg på nå på computerworld.no/event. Vi ses 28. mars på Meet Ullevål.
Reklame.
Andrew Hills fra Daimler Mercedes er AI-spesialist. Han er en av deltakerne i et panel som snakket om AI og AI-personlige assistenter og hvordan denne teknologien kan ha ulike personligheter. De nevnte for eksempel at britisk Google Home kan bruke mye ironi, mens de sa at amerikanere er ikke så gode på ironi, så på amerikansk Google Home så blir ikke dette brukt. La oss høre hva Andrew har å si.
Hey, so I'm working at Mercedes-Benz Research and Development, and that's the North American research arm of Mercedes-Benz. And a lot of what we work on in Sunnyvale is next generation user concepts, especially how we can work with AI and voice assistants.
And great. You talked a lot about AI and personality. Can you explain what the personality is in AI?
Yeah, so when we talk to each other as humans, our interactions are governed by our different personalities and our preferences and how we like to do things, how we like to talk, and all these sort of things. And we expect that people want to have the same sort of very natural interactions when we're interacting with AIs. So this means that it has to also match your personality so that both the human involved and the AI can have this this click that you have with two different people who really understand how they're working together. And so this means that it needs to be really, really customized and personalized, not just for how the AI is, but also who they're talking to and how that person would like to interact, and also for the context that's generally around them, so they can be aware of the environment around them as, and what's going on as well.
Yeah, but how does the personality or the AI understand what kind of personality to present to each person?
So I think this is also really analogous to how we do it as people. It's not like when I first meet somebody, they hand me a little booklet that tells me how they would like me to interact with them. Rather, we start with a baseline that we've learned through our interactions with other people. And then we push a little further. We learn what kind of jokes are okay to make, what sort of formality levels are okay. And you push it up and you get a little more aggressive. And then if it's received poorly, then we detect this. We see a little frown by somebody. We see somebody stutter a little bit or hold a little. And this is our cue to us that we need to, you know, take it back and that maybe wasn't really appropriate. And so we can do the same thing with the AIs, that they can use this this sort of knowledge of affective factors to say, oh, this probably is something that made them uncomfortable. This is something I shouldn't do again. And then the AI can learn to match for the interaction at hand.
Great. You told about that humans are doing mistakes all the time. And in the same way, artificial intelligence should also be able to do mistakes.
Yeah, I think this is actually one of the things that makes us really human, that we were sort of built to take risks and make mistakes. And this is how we expand our programming as humans, rather than just all being exact copies of, you know, the biological factors that we're born with. And so the same thing with machine learning systems, that they also need to learn and they also need to push boundaries in order to reach their full potential.
Yeah. We have seen the last few years now that it has happened a lot in the car industry, and you're representing Mercedes here. What kind of personality in AI can you use in cars?
So we want to make sure that it's exactly tailored for the driver. So we embrace this idea of extreme personalization so that each driver and their driver profile gets the experience that's built for them. And this is sort of where we're taking it as we build our technology stack into the future.
Yeah, that was super interesting. We also talked about that it would be different way to address people or to have personalities from different countries, like British are more into their kind of humor, and Americans is the other way. How are you solving this?
We definitely expect, there's definitely a cultural component to any kind of interaction, and the systems need to have a way to pick up on it. And for the well-seasoned human traveler, as they go to more and more countries, you can see them very easily switch their interactions with different people as they move around. And the AIs can have the same sort of knowledge base as a well-seasoned traveler, so they can make sure that if they're in a more conservative country, they can use more conservative methods of address. If they're in a more casual country, they know they're on a first-name basis. And then again, when they make a mistake and they call somebody the wrong thing, then they can immediately correct, say, oh, sorry, Mr. So-and-so, and adapt in order to fit this.
If we try to look into the future, what kind of feature do you think we can see in AI and personality in the years to come?
I think we're going to see AI everywhere, and I think we're not even going to I think some of it we're not even going to notice. For instance, some people might say that, you know, oh, I have never used AI, but even when you're using the autocorrect on your phone or spell checker or not getting a lot of spam in your email box, it's AI that's powering all of this. So we're going to see it completely across the board in all industries. But the stuff that really excites me about AI is how it can be used for more intelligent and seamless UX concepts.
Reklame.
Trenger du en partner som kan ta deg til nye høyder I digitalsamfunnet? AlreadyOn både forretningsrådgiver og en applikasjonsutvikler som løfter deg opp I skyen med ferdige komponenter. Med kunderelasjonssystemet Sjo I skyen kan du digitalt kommunisere med kunder og prospekts og hjelpe dem videre I kundereisen.
Reklame.
Rohit Bhargava, han har skrevet et titals bøker om trender, hvor flere av dem har vært Wall Street Journal bestsellers. Han har tidligere holdt foredrag I Norge. Han kjenner Christian Ringnes. Han har en del slides I presentasjonen sin med bilder av Christian Ringnes også. Det litt morsomt som nordmann å se. Han har nettopp vært keynote speaker I en fullsatt sal som rommer 10.000 mennesker. Og det har vært kjempestemning. Altså 10.000 mennesker som sitter og ser på, og han står på scenen I midten, og du har en gigantisk skjerm på hver side. Det helt utrolig. Vi snakker med Rohit.
When I was looking at you, I was sitting like 50 meters from the scene, and I saw like an ocean of people around there. How does it feel to stand in front of 10,000 people?
It's well, at a certain point you can't tell because the lights are in your face, so you only can see the first maybe 20 rows. Then everything else is just black, so you don't really think about it too much as a speaker. You just try and be as good as you can be.
But it must feel very good to know that it's so many people that is listening. Yeah.
It feels great. I mean, I know people were lined up for a long time, and I've been coming to this event for like 8 years. So I know a lot of people here. So it feels really good because it feels like I'm around friends, people who think about the world the same way that I do.
Your speech was about 7 non-obvious trends of the future. That was very interesting, but you started with telling about the role of being creative. Could you tell a little about that again?
Yes, my story was me working in marketing agencies and not being what the agencies would call a creative, which is a person who was responsible for creativity. And I felt bad because it felt like someone was telling me not to be creative. And that was the challenge that got me started to think about the world and what can I see that other people don't see. And that turned into finding trends, which turned into the book and led me to everything else.
You also talked about innovation in a new way that I haven't thought about before. But can you first define innovation?
Yeah, innovation, I think, to me, is seeing what everyone else sees and thinking of something different than everyone else thinks of, coming up with a new idea. And one of the jokes, I was sort of joking, but I was sort of serious, is a lot of times what organizations ask for is a case study before they say yes to something. And if it's really innovative, there's no case study because no one's done it before. And that's a challenge we have to get past in our head because it doesn't have to be risky, but the only way to do it is not to find somebody else who's already done it. That's a bad idea.
You also said that something that I related to innovation because you said changes happen all the time. And that's kind of innovation all the time.
Yeah, I talked about how it's disruption all the time with everything. And so our challenge is that we always feel like we're behind, no matter how savvy we are, no matter how up to date we are, no matter what we read, we always feel like we're behind. And that's not a good feeling for any of us, right? We want to feel like we're on top of something. And so what I challenge people to say is what you know or what you're paying attention to is a good basis. Don't feel like you're always behind because everybody else is doing the same thing that you are.
But at the same time, all of us is using the word innovation all the time. You you said something about that, how many times it's used.
Yeah, I said that at this conference, innovation was probably used like 60,000 times as a word, as a buzzword at events, because everyone says, I want innovation, I want to think about innovation, I want trends, right? My whole talk was about trends. And that is one of the most common things you'll hear here.
Yeah. You also are a book writer. And you have written the same book every year since 2011. Is that right?
Well, it's not the same book. I mean, there's new trends every year. So the way it works is some part of the book about the process is the same every year. But every year there's 15 new trends for that year. So I rewrite that part completely with new trends every year. And the reason we do it every year is because of what you said before. Everything's changing so fast. So we redo it with new trends every year to try and describe the change.
One of the trends that you were talking about was robots. Can you please repeat that? It was really fun.
Yeah, robots, was the biggest challenge, I said, with robots is not getting the technology to work. It's getting the humans not to freak out when they are next to the robots. And I was sharing a story of what happens when a human and a robot are in an elevator, which sounds like a joke, but actually that was one of the challenges with putting robots into hotels, for example. That when the robot got into the elevator, the person started to panic and get really, really concerned. Where's this robot going? Who's controlling it? Is it going to do something bad? And that was a big problem.
And small talk?
Yeah, I don't know. Small talk is a very American thing, to do small talk in an elevator. And definitely the robots are not good at that.
But when you have foreseen or seen trends in that many years, have you measured how many of the trends that you have foreseen that is actually come true?
Yeah, in fact, every year there's an appendix at the end of the book that grades all of the previous trends based on whether they're still relevant today. So there's a lot of transparency built in to say we look at the trends afterwards to see if they're still remained or if they're not as relevant.
But you have also been in Norway before. Are you coming back? And what happened when you were in Norway?
Yes, I've been there, I think, 3 times. I went for events, to speak at events. And it was wonderful. I actually went there one time, and I went to this beautiful venue called the Mini Bottle Gallery that was run by Christian Ringes. And, he's the owner of it. And it was really interesting because it got me thinking about curation. And actually, I tell the story of that mini bottle gallery in the book.
Deb Garber spesialist innenfor merkevarebygging og har jobbet for selskap som Dell, Microsoft, NBC Universal. Og i tillegg så har hun skrevet flere bøker. Og i dag skal hun snakke litt om den ene boken sin. Og hun skal fortelle oss litt mer om merkevarebygging. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good, thanks. How are you? I'm great. Thanks for coming to my speech. I appreciate it.
It was really interesting. How did you feel to have this speech? Because there was a lot of people coming.
Yeah, there were a lot of people there, and I thought it was going to be a slow start. Being the very first speaker on the Sunday morning of South by Southwest, it's like the worst possible slot to get. So I was pleased that it was standing room only and that we had a lot of people who were there and who seemed excited to be there. Kind of a slow start. People were not interacting with me in quite the way that I usually expect, but I think overall it went very well.
Yeah, you got a lot of questions also at the end. Have you had any speeches in Norway yet?
I haven't spoken in Norway yet, and if you're listening to this, I'd love to come to Norway, so figure out a way to get me over there.
I will. Let's hope that someone will invite you after listening to Digitaliseringspodden. You have written a book that has a catchy title, which is Branding is Sex, Get Your Customer Laid and Sell Everything. What is it about?
So this book really is about making the deep emotional connections with buyers. So an emotional relationship exists between customers and the brands that they love. And this book, Branding is Sex, is really all about making your brand about your customers so that they can bond with it in an irrational way so that they'll buy it time and time again. It's a how-to book, mostly. There's some good stories from my business and brands that I admire and brands that have done right by their customers. But for the most part, it's a very tactical step-by-step instruction for how to build your brand.
Yeah, you talked a lot about brands. Could you repeat how you define a brand?
Absolutely. So I think that a brand is more than just its logo or its marketing or a campaign or its website. A brand is the emotional connection that an organization makes with its customers. And the best brands in the world are the ones that align with their customers' values and beliefs. And so I truly believe that a brand is a set of values and beliefs and ideas and feelings and emotions and bonds that gets people to buy from you, not just the first time, but again and again and again. The best brands in the world are meaningfully differentiated and they are singular in how they show up in the world. So it's something that guards you against competitors, because we all know that there are a lot of competitive products out there, regardless of what industry you're in or whether you serve consumers or other businesses. A brand is something that helps you sustainably keep the competition at bay.
Yeah, you also talked about that if you're like branding a feature, then you will not be unique for a long time.
Right.
Can you tell a little more about that?
Yeah, I always tell the story about how when I bought my first automobile, I was offered power door locks and power windows. They were extra, and I paid about $500 extra for them. And then a couple years later, one of the car manufacturers decided to make that standard equipment. They included it on every car. And as soon as they did that, the entire industry had to follow suit. So if you're branding on just a feature that is imitating, eventually, when everyone else catches up with you, it's no longer going to be a sustainable differentiator. That's why I encourage organizations always to look to their brand, which the brand, again, is that emotional connection and the emotional essence, kind of the core DNA of the organization. And so if you have that and you emphasize that, then it combats that issue of having similar functions competing against each other. So don't be power door locks and power windows.
But do you have any examples for how you're building the brands in the correct way?
Sure. Yeah, I work with a lot of brands that are doing it right. And one of the brands that I work with is Dell Corporation. They're a huge company here in Austin, and I've been working with them for probably about 15 years. And they actually do a really good job of making the brand about their customers. It's taken a long time to get them to a place where they're not just marketing on the basis of speeds and feeds and bits and bytes, but they're telling stories about their customers being successful using their products to win in this new, more difficult economy. And so that's a brand that I really admire. They do that through good storytelling, powerful campaigns, and really bringing their customers into the conversation about the brand. And rather than making the brand about them, Dell, they make the brand about their customers.
Yeah, you said the word storytelling.
Yes.
That's very trendy right now in marketing.
Yeah.
Can you say a few words about storytelling?
Yeah, absolutely. So telling stories about your brand by involving your customers in it is like one of the best ways to make people aware of what your brand stands for. It's a huge trend right now, brand storytelling, and you know, more and more content marketers doing video and audio and visual storytelling, and using customers to actually act as testimonials for the brand without putting words in their mouth. It can be very, very powerful. It also, I caution people who are into brand storytelling, it can be really easy to let the stories sort of go off the rails and not be connected and not intertwined and just be stories for story's sake, rather than like really being about nailing what is the vision of this brand, who is this brand for, and ultimately how does the brand get people laid. So just beware that just telling stories is not enough. It all needs to be focused on the brand. And then the last thing I'll say about that is, you know, I think brand storytelling is here to stay, and I'm glad to see that brands are using all of these different methods and content to sell their brands by telling stories about their users. Branding is like defining the story of your brand. Branding ultimately is like figuring out what is our story, and then brand storytelling is kind of the marketing piece of that.
Oh, great. The last question. You're getting coming out with a new book now. Mm-hmm. Can you say a few words about that one?
Sure, absolutely. I have a book. We just started selling it last week, and it's already a bestseller. But that book is called Irrational Loyalty. And what that book is about is sort of lessons from the last couple of years of brands that either have been able to endure disasters, or they're brands that are struggling as a result of a disaster created by their leadership, by their culture, maybe sometimes by someone else, or just, you know, making a big brand blunder. How do the best brands in the world endure any kind of turbulence that can face their brands? I recommend it very highly. It's a short read, and it's designed to be read over one short airplane flight, so it'll only take about 2.5 hours to read. So I recommend that everybody get that book.
Vi skal også møte Ethan Mayer, som mentor og har vært med på mange startups. Han kommer fra New York, og jeg spør, hva gjør du der?
So I'm a serial entrepreneur. I was a former television producer. I've created 4 startups. For the last year, I was actually inside a publicly traded global manufacturer doing corporate innovation. The project just finished. I'm going to spend the next 6 months figuring out what company to build next.
That's super cool. It's very fun to make new companies.
I like it very much.
I've tried it myself. But tomorrow you're going to have a session here at South by Southwest. Can you tell about that?
Sure. So I've been chosen by South by Southwest as a mentor. I'm actually a global mentor for various startups around the world. Here at South by Southwest, we're going to talk about innovation and product development. So I'm going to meet with, I believe, 5 different entrepreneurs who are going to be able to sit with me for 20 minutes apiece and ask me questions about product development and how to make their startup attractive for outside investment, outside capital.
So you will sit with one person, or it will be a group?
Yeah, so South by Southwest has started a few years ago doing shorter form content. So it used to be more just the hour and a half panels. Now there's 15-minute speeches, and there's also these mentor one-on-one sessions. The community asked for a lot more short-form content, so I'm here as a result of that. So this will be one-on-one, and then other people have also reached out to me. I'm here till Wednesday. Other people have reached out to me to schedule additional sessions as needed, and then I'm also doing another session at the Capital Factory. So that's the big startup entrepreneurial organization here in Austin, and I'm doing another mentor session with them on Tuesday.
But when you're doing this mentor session, what's the most important advices that you used to give?
Well, I think it's important to listen to what people are actually asking for. People come in with very different motives. Sometimes they come in with a very specific question to ask.
The
entrepreneurs are coming in. Sometimes they're coming in with a very specific question to ask, and you just listen and try to help out the best they can. A lot of times they're looking for validation. Being an entrepreneur is quite lonely, and you want to ask a lot of questions, and you want to be able to be sure that you're on the right path. So it's a lot of times me being able to give them advice from having seen and advised dozens of companies, saying, you know, this is right, or you might want to do this, or you might want to do that, or you might want to try. Sometimes the relationships last longer than just the sessions, you know. I've turned some of these into more advisory roles as needed, and I just love being able to give back to the community that's given so much to me.
That sounds very interesting. Good luck with your session tomorrow.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Paresh Shah, han en sprudlende coach som jobber og holder til I LA. Han skal snakke om gearheads som må trenes til å bli bedre ledere. Jeg spør han, hva gjør du her?
Well, in 2 contexts, I'm working with my business partner Rohit Bhargava, who just gave an epic keynote on non-obvious thinking and 7 non-obvious trends, and we've worked together on this project. And as part of that, one of the things that we're doing is we're finding that there's a lot of gaps in leadership, and so You're what we would call a geek. What do you call yourself? A geek, a nerd, an engineer, an IT?
Entrepreneur.
You're an entrepreneur, maybe, exactly. Yeah. So one of the
also probably a nerd.
A nerd, exactly. Yeah. So I'm a nerd as well. I'm a mechanical engineer, an aerospace engineer. I worked at Northrop Grumman for many years on high-tech electronics and spacecraft. And what we found over 20 to 30 years is gearheads like us, engineers, IT types, scientists, and analytical folks, we tend to be really great at seven things.
This
okay?
is people that is obsessed with what they are doing, I guess.
Yes. Well, we wouldn't be in the field we are in as geeks and nerds unless we love these things. And what we found is that gearheads tend to have certain obstacles and blind spots that prevent them from becoming leaders and innovators and you know great inspiring folks. And so we have what we've called Gearhead to Groophead Leadership Academy, which is a way to transform gearheads into non-obvious innovators, because every company needs innovation, successful entrepreneurs, and inspiring leaders. And so we have seven strengths that gearheads typically have. We're problem solvers. We're analytical. Right? You're very analytical, right, Jens?
I hope so.
Yeah. We're very critical thinking. We can work independently. Mm-hmm. So we have seven great strengths that gearheads typically have. However, what we found in the past 25, 30 years
but,
of work...
Just to understand gearhead, then we are talking about people like Steve Jobs and Elon Musk.
Elon Musk.
And they are not very known for great leadership because they are doing things their own way.
Well, it's up to you to judge who's great or not. It's in the eye of the person who works for them or the recipient of the service.
They've made big companies, so it's not...
Right. So either way, I admire them both in amazing ways. I'm sure you do as well. So what we find, though, is gearheads, geeks, tend to have seven career-deadly blind spots. And often our strengths lead to blind spots based on the research we've seen. So, for instance, our strengths are we're critical thinkers. We're analytical. We're curious. What happens is that leads to blind spots. So some of the blind spots, we don't have time to go through all of them today, are things like we don't know how to be creative. Okay? We micromanage. That's the number one blind spot, micromanagement. Because we were independent workers, and then we feel that we can manage in that same way. So micromanagement is one of the blind spots. Inability to make the trade-offs between the technical sophistication of the problem, which we love. We love solving things, right, Chance? And the other trade-offs of the business trade-offs, scope, time, schedule, customer expectations, as well as the human trade-offs. Now that you're a leader, you have people with jobs and families and sicknesses and other things. So we're very bad at that as gearheads. So we help you transform to a gearhead in the Gearhead to Groophead Academy. Other problems we have are the inability to be customer-centric. How often do geeks go, these salespeople, they're selling stuff that's not possible. I've got a better solution. So we have a variety of strengths that lead to blind spots, and these blind spots actually can really be career killers, particularly in today's world. Jens, I want you to guess how many new STEM graduates come out every year, science, technology, engineering, math, in the globe. Guess a number. Let's play a game. New graduates in science, technology, engineering, math in the world.
In the world. It's come out a lot in China and India, I guess. So, but I don't have a clue. Could it be 50 million?
That's a great big guess. Yes, it's 8.3 million, which is huge, okay? Okay, so let me just calibrate what 8.3 million is. There are 8.3 million. If you think you can survive on being just technically smart, which is what many gearheads think, hey, I'm great at problem solving, I'm great at technical stuff, you cannot in today's age, because 8.3 million new, hungry, state-of-the-art, flexible, like they're so hungry, are going to take you out if you only are technical. And to calibrate 8.3 million, guess how many Uber drivers there are in the world.
It should be more.
It's not. There's only 2 million Uber drivers in the world. So there are four times the number of Uber drivers in the world getting created every year to take your job. Okay? Do you know how many people visit the Eiffel Tower? I used to live in Paris. 7 million per year. There are more people who are coming out as gearheads than Eiffel Tower. And do you know how many employees McDonald's has globally?
No.
8 million is 20 times the number of employees McDonald's Corporation has globally. There are 20 times the number of McDonald's employees globally getting created every year. To be a gearhead. So how do you be a contribution? How do you succeed? How do you elevate your career? You need to become a group head. So we teach the 7 essential upgrades. It's like a software upgrade. And gearheads are very good at learning new things, right? I learned COBOL when I was young, and Fortran, and you know, now they're learning Swift, they're learning, you know, Python. So gearheads are very good at learning. That's one of their skills. So how do we learn these soft skills? Well, we move from the IQ to the human quotient. And so the upgrades are, how do you communicate effectively? How do you be creative on demand? How do you be an inspiring storyteller? So you can tell your story either to a big audience, like we do in our conferences and the keynotes we give, or simply in a one-on-one conversation. If you want resources, you need to be a storyteller in an age where, you know, cats and people doing stupid things on YouTube are what you're competing with for the attention of your staff, your team, your budget. So we have the 7 essential upgrades to transform you from a gearhead to a group head. And that's basically what we do at the Gearhead to Groophead Academy, g2gacademy.com. And we have a curriculum now. We've been doing these workshops and keynotes around the world. And people are like, oh, my God, no wonder I'm stuck. And this idiot got my job. How often have you felt that some idiot got your job, someone above you? And you, for me, I realized I didn't have the skills back then that this person had around sales, empathy, creativity, that make them a group head. So if you go to g2gacademy.com, we're taking the workshops and keynotes we give to corporations around the world, and we've created an online training version and that people can come and do an assessment for free to see what kind of a gearhead or group head am I, and you can actually see how can I elevate that so that we can solve the big problems of the world, because there's not a company in the world that doesn't need gearheads like you, Jens, or me. Every company needs technologists, and if we don't bring out those aspects of the humanity, or how do we communicate as technologists? How do we understand customer needs? How do we be creative? How do we have productive conflict? How do we be strategic managers, not micromanagers? Then we're unable to solve the problems that we're tasked to do. So I'm really pleased to be here with you. It's so exciting to hear what you all are doing at Already On, and you're bringing great guests together to share thought leadership. And that, to me, is the sign of a group head. You're not staying just within your task as a company of, well, you know, we build software solutions. No, you're actually sharing thought leadership, okay? And that's part of what great leaders do.
Thank you very much.
Very good, Jens. Appreciate it.
Det var det vi hadde tid til i dagens episode. Hør oss neste uke, da vi tilbake i Norge med ny gjest i studio. Fortell venner og kjente om digitaliseringspodden, så får vi enda flere lyttere. Dere som interessert i digitalisering, også dere som best i stand til å forstå fremtiden, som her nå. Ha en fantastisk uke!
Takk for at du hørte på digitaliseringspodden, levert av Computer World og Already On.